we go, coming down, and well, we're live, so away we go, folks.
Yeah.
It's time to step inside the Iktagon with your host, Ike Feldman.
What's up, everybody? What's up, fight fans? What's up, combat sports community? It is your boy, your brother in arms, Isaac Ike freaking Feldman. As I've said once, and as I've said again, I will say one more time, yes, freaking is on my birth certificate. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope everybody is feeling swell. Shout outs to the Anik and Florian pod, the most consistent MMA pod over the last 8 years. Yes, even Mr. Helwani has taken off days, but Anik, Kenny, Flo are always on top of it. I strive to be on that level. My guest this episode strives to be on that level. We are grinding together in this space of MMA Twitter, or MMAX going to give it to you. Yes, that is sweat on my arms. Just did a burpee challenge. Shout outs to David Goggins and all my boys in the burpee group. But shout outs to my boy, my Twitter boy, my internet friend. Wasn't sure it was a real profile picture, but as you can see, he is live and living flesh. Unless this is AI, it's a fake background, fake beard and everything. Val Duar, did I say your last name correctly?
Duar, yeah.
I like the French roll to it. It's kind of perfect with Poirier and Benoit Saint-Denis. So let's start with there. I know what your biggest takeaway from 299 is, mine too. Dana White spoke gushingly about Dustin Poirier and the big win. The old killing the young. We know this happened in boxing a long time. I believe MMA is just a few decades behind boxing, and we're starting to see those storylines of a old Roy Jones Jr., Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hearns, the old dog killing the young dog. What was your thoughts with DP getting it done in Miami?
Yeah, I mean, my main thoughts is I can't believe people expected Benoit to be able to, like, strike with him. Yeah, you know, I mean, Dustin was not completely counted out, but some people were like, oh, he's too old. I never saw any of that. The Gaethje loss was not something where it's like he looked slow. He didn't look bad. He looked great. They both looked great. And Gaethje just caught him with a brilliant shot. So I was relatively confident in my boy coming into this one. I was a bit nervous, but it's always the case when your favorite fighter fights. But yeah, I mean,
oh, favorite fighter.
Definitely.
Oh, so
definitely.
We have to take it with a grain of salt.
I mean, yeah, we do. But I try to be objective. I mean, listen, what Benoit did as far as like pace and pressure, and he has some good grappling, but it's more about brute strength with him and just aggression. And Dustin, he more put himself in bad situations, as we saw. Everyone's talking about the guillotine. And I'm not like, I don't want to discount everything Benoit did. It's just, he's not at that elite level yet. I think that's pretty clear. And I think Dustin, it's pretty clear, still has a right to be in the top five and the top three, even at lightweight in the UFC.
I couldn't agree more. And I think he's receiving more credit for fighting Benoit's Saint-Denis than fighting Dan Hooker a second time, or Michael Chandler for a second time, like a top five guy who is like well-renowned. He's fighting a guy that just cracked into the top 10. Rogan was speaking gushingly about Benoit Saint-Denis. That man was special forces. He knows war. When he's on the mic, he says, thank you, American Army, for helping me. That means he's an excellent MMA fighter. I was like, what? That's apples? What the hell are you talking? And he kind of built this, like, the Mike Tyson effect, like, beaten before. My biggest factor, the reality of it was, oh, was Dustin even training before that day of contract whole thing online where he's like, I didn't even sign it. And I was like, oh, this is about 6 weeks out. Does that mean he's kind of been lollygagging throughout this camp? And now he's going to turn it into high gear. So that was my only iffy on the fence. But obviously he was training. Obviously knew it wasn't going to be a UFC 230, Nate Diaz 165, that whole like pulling out of the fight 2 weeks to get stem cells in his hip. He was like, I can't deal with that. So he put it out earlier. That's what we can do, is learn from our mistakes. And man, hopefully BSD can learn from his mistake. Stop rushing in there. Stop being aggressive. Stop emptying the gas tank. In my opinion, I don't think you can blame it on staff. I think the beautiful footwork, and DP put himself in those bad situations, as you were saying. So where do we go from here following that result of the UFC 299 co-main event?
Well, there's a couple places to go. As far as Benoit Saint-Denis, I don't know how viable it is for to tell him to stop being like so hyper aggressive. He could maybe tone it down a little bit, be more measured, but with he's only been training MMA, it's like 4 or 5 years now. I mean, he obviously had some combat experience in the army. Like, I'm sure they did hand-to-hand combat in French special forces, but
if there was a knife there, like if Bruce Buffer said, and no, like, and
if threw Joshua, a knife in his corner, Joshua Fabia came in, started chasing him around.
Oh my God.
But yeah, like, I think he's thrived on aggression and it just doesn't work at that certain level. He can certainly temper it. He can certainly learn better defense, but there's just a limited time frame in which you can learn to be an elite MMA fighter, or it's a limit. Yeah. He just had a limited time frame to learn to be an elite MMA fighter. And he didn't, like, he's a very good MMA fighter. And I think emptying the gas tank is one issue, but I also think he has great cardio. Like, seen that in the Zaleski Dos Santos fight, 3 rounds of him just getting beat up. The problem isn't that he like will fade away completely and like gas out like a, someone that gasses out like Derek Lewis or whatever, Ngannou versus Stipe, someone who just gasses out and becomes totally ineffective. It's that he just gasses out. He's still there, but he's sloppier and sloppier, and his defense is already bad. So I would say my main thing for him, tighten up the defense, but keep the aggression and the pace.
Again, we're being joined by Val Duat. Follow him on Twitter, Instagram as well, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same handle?
Same handle.
Excellent, excellent. At the Three Eels. Is that a reference to the Mermaid movie? where the eels, or is it the L's, the Three L's?
It's just, yeah, Three L's. It's old. I thought about changing it because it really has no more relevance in my life now, but it's just something I've always had.
Was it like a rap group for you back in eighth grade?
Close. One of the L's is Lupe Fiasco. I'll say that much.
Oh, what a perfect segue, my man. Before we get to the if you are who you say you are in the main event, if you guys don't know who that is, just Google UFC 299 walkouts. My last thing with the co-main event, who should BSD fight in their next fight?
Yeah, so, okay, I don't really care to see Dustin fight Islam again. Like, I think that's probably what's going to happen just because, like, look at the lightweight division. Armin and Charles is a number one contender fight, but Islam wants to fight in July, which makes sense. Like, that Ramadan ends, he has 8 weeks or so to prepare, and then fights in July. Charles and Armin probably will not be ready for that. Gaethje and Holloway, not going to be ready for that. So it would make sense if Dustin ends up fighting Islam in July. I would rather see him fight, you know, someone, like what he said is, the reason he didn't fight Beneil Dariush before is because that's not a fight that got his blood boiling. He wants these action fights. That's why he accepted Benoit Saint-Denis, because that guy brings the aggression. It's 5 finishes and 5 UFC wins. Like, that's what he wanted. He wanted war. He wanted to live up to the name on his hat.
Yes.
So I would like to see him versus someone like, if Jalen Turner beats Moicano, I think that's a good one.
Yes.
Even though Fazeev is on a 2-fight losing streak, when he comes back, I don't think Dustin is too bothered about that sort of thing. I think it makes sense as a violent fight. You know, 5-round co-main event type deal where just bring it all action, guaranteed fight of the night, just like the one with Gaethje and Fazeev. Yeah, what do you think?
Just the light, do you see the rankings on your side?
Yeah.
Okay, I would love to see Gaethje Poirier do the trilogy.
Yeah.
I think that was the fight. They literally are fighting back-to-back months, back-to-back big pay-per-view events. Why not put Poirier Gaethje as a 5-round BMF rematch on UFC 300? No offense to Max. I get it. I respect that he's done it before. He wants to right that wrong. Ah, man, I would have no problem if Oliveira and Armin go a decision, and it's a split decision, and it's back and forth. Nobody's really dominant. No drops, no submission attempts. I have no problem with Dustin Poirier, given his entire resume, to have Poirier, Islam Makhachev. I'm sure Poirier would sign up for that, being the B-side, to go back to Abu Dhabi, to face a guy who is a Dagestani wrestler, hashtag UFC 242. I would love to see that callback to that fight. And I believe, like, Dustin Poirier, even though Gilbert Burns lost as well, I believe Poirier, Burns, you can't keep a good man down, that they are on that trajectory to be the champion when they're 37, 38, a la a Michael Bisping. Like, those stories will happen. I'd love to see DP in another title fight. I love that what you just said with the BSD versus Moicano or Turner. That would be a fun fight. BSD versus Fiziev is absolute violence. I agree with that. Man,
My one thing about so I don't want to get my hopes up for like what you're saying about Dustin being a Michael Bisping type champ. I don't want to get my hopes up. So I've kind of written, I hate to say it, I've written him off for becoming like undisputed champ ever. That's why I say I don't want to see him versus Islam. Because Dustin talks about himself. He has two or three more fights left in him. Maybe the next one's it. You never know. I would love to see him beat Islam. I would love, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I think Islam presents, you know, pretty much the worst possible style for him to beat. I think another option for Dustin is the loser of Arman versus Charles Oliveira. And yeah, that Gaethje fight, the second Gaethje fight, for years, I was like, this is the fight I want. Since Gaethje lost to Khabib, I'm like, it's time. Make the rematch. So now, of course, like I'm going to say make the trilogy, but if Gaethje beats Max, he's going to be waiting around for his title fight because he absolutely will deserve it at that point. I mean, he even deserves it at this point, arguably.
Wow. 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 If I had to give my unbiased opinion, I would say that are you trying to coast DP to a safe career? You don't want to see him against Olives. You don't want to see against Islam.
No, I'd be fine to see him against Olives again. I just... Yeah, I'm not even like if he takes it, I'll be fine with it. I'm just like, I don't think it's a matchup I need to see. I think unbiased, I think Charles versus Islam again, more compelling. Arman versus Islam, definitely more compelling. Even Gaethje versus Islam, more compelling at this point.
Are we giving it the Brazilian effect that we saw with Alex Pereira versus Jan Błachowicz? I'm trying to make a poor connection between the two. They're just both Brazilian. But Pereira barely beat Błachowicz and got sent into a title fight. If Olives just barely wins, gets his hand raised against a tough opponent, against a streaking opponent, a dangerous opponent in Armin on a big card, if he just gets his hand raised, is that enough for a title fight?
I think, it depends on what Gaethje does, because those are the two fights. Like, the winner of either of those two fights could go into the title fight. So it could be whoever does it more impressively. Dustin just got knocked out by Gaethje. Beneil just got knocked out by Oliveira. They're kind of tied right now for me in terms of where they're at. Maybe Gaethje's a little bit ahead even because he beat Fiziev before, but Olives has the win over Gaethje. He has bragging rights there. So, yeah, I think whoever gets it done more impressively between Gaethje, Arman, and Oliveira is the most deserving of the next title fight.
Again, we're being joined by the second greatest Val on planet Earth. I got to give a shout out to Val Kilmer.
Thought so.
I mean, and playing off the Saint Denis, like the Saint is one of my all time favorite movies. Like
Tombstone's one of mine.
Oh, I got to see it. I just saw somebody post.
Never seen Tombstone. Oh, dude, no. You need to see Tombstone.
And I haven't seen the remake either. I'll have to check out the original.
Yeah, definitely check out the original.
Before we get to the main event of UFC 299, what is your favorite division to watch? If you see this main event on a fight night, you're like, oh my God, I got to tune into this. Is it the bantamweight, lightweight, welter, heavy?
Bantamweight? Definitely bantamweight. Bantamweight, then lightweight, then flyweight.
Okay, you got lightweight in there. Statistically speaking, I believe the top 15 most fight night bonuses are all held by lightweights. Jim Miller,
yeah.
Nate Diaz, he's
Charles, Dustin, Gaethje. Yeah, definitely. So but light bantamweight, A, it's younger. B, it wasn't given a fair shake. And C, right now, I just think it's the best, arguably the best division in MMA history at any point. Inside and outside the UFC. Like, you are outside the UFC, it's the best division outside the UFC too. You got Patchy Mix, Raytheon Stotts, Kyoji fought at bantamweight a bit. You got Mighty Mouse is technically a bantamweight, depending, you know, it's 135. But then in the UFC, Jan, Corey, Sean, Aljo, though not anymore, I guess. Yeah, I could keep going, but I won't. I think it's just the most stacked division. I love lightweight. My three favorite fighters, Charles, Dustin, and Justin, are lightweights, but I think bantamweight is a better division right now.
Man, I'm going to have to call you Captain Segway. I mean, in the radio business, you try to make smooth sweepers from one topic to another. You brought up Lupe Fiasco. You're bringing up the bantamweight division. Look at the UFC 299 main event. My goodness, the bantamweight title between Marlon Chito Vera against Sugar Sean O'Malley, the remake, rematch, I believe 3 or 4 years in the making, UFC 250 or 52, around that range.
Yeah.
I was hoping, just for the sake of craziness and chaos, that Chito Vera kicked his leg again and it wobbled out. I just think that would have been incredible, but it didn't happen. We got a masterful performance from Sugar Sean. And a lot of people won't understand that Chito Vera isn't just some bad fighter, or isn't just a punch a bag. And Sean O'Malley doesn't just hit with patty cake punches and knees. Chito Vera took a freaking Arturo Gatti beating. Oh my freaking Lord. Was that a way to hang in there? And like O'Malley's like, dude, I'm hitting a brick wall. He's the one that fell to the canvas first. Yes, it was after a body shot. But the point is that Chito Vera could have gone probably 2 more rounds. You hear the legendary conditioning stories. He runs 10 miles after all of his 4 workouts for fun. Like, the dude is always in the gym. My goodness. What is your biggest takeaway from UFC 299's main event?
All right, so going in, I thought Sean was a bad matchup for Chito. Like, just too rangy. Chito has trouble tracking guys down. That's his big thing. If a guy doesn't stand right in front of him, he can't put his work in. Like, when a guy stands right in front of him, he's going to win, because he's tougher than they are, than everyone is. He has a better chin than everyone. He has more cardio than everyone. He has those Perillo-taught elbows and clinch work, because Jason Perillo, Muay Thai legend. But yeah, Sean, I thought it would be more dancing on the outside. I didn't think he was going to make Chito look that clueless. Like, I thought he would be mainly having to avoid it. Like, oh, I don't want to get hit. Chito hits really hard. The leg kicks messed me up last time. I thought it was going to be a slower fight. Sean showed me, A, he can go 5 rounds. Like, that's his first time going 5 rounds, and he did it at a record-setting pace. So, to me, I already thought Sean was elite, was really impressive as a fighter. Now, to me, he's like in the top 5 pound for pound. Honestly, like, he hasn't the thing is, people might say, oh, he hasn't been tested. Like, but he, like, Chito isn't like an elite like that. But Aljo and Piotr Jan are. Even if I thought Jan won that fight, Sean's gotten better since then. I think for me, he's like, I think he is number 5 pound for pound right now. Chito, nothing changes in my opinion about Chito. I knew he was that tough. I knew everything we saw from Chito. I knew that he had the ability to look like a punching bag. But yeah, mainly just Sean can turn up the violence and doesn't just have to avoid against a big hitter like Chito.
100% agree on everything. Let me ask you something different then. Did Sean O'Malley surpass Israel Adesanya for the guys, quote unquote, active? I know McGregor's floating out there in the cloud, like what is the Mario Kart, the guy who brings your cart back onto the track? Like,
oh, that's yeah, Conor McGregor. The yellow cloud guy. Yeah.
That's what McGregor is right now. Meanwhile, Chandler's like revving his engine, like, dude, come on already. But active fighter, did Sean O'Malley pass Israel Adesanya as the most popular active fighter?
Okay, with Izzy losing to Sean, maybe. Like, to Sean Strickland, obviously, 2 Seans, make that clear. With Izzy losing to Sean, yeah, maybe. Like, I think it's not that clear, though, who the second top star is. I think Charles Oliveira is underrated as a star a bit.
I didn't realize how many followers he has.
Yeah,
he's huge. Close to the 7 million, 10 million followers.
It's not just in Brazil. Like, he's huge in America. I mean, people love good fighting. People love finishing fights. Charles Oliveira finishes fights more than anyone else. He did it for a while at a title level, and he's still fighting at that level, just has the one loss. So, of course, they're going to love him. Like, he brings the violence, he brings the action, and he does it in all realms. He has grappling that isn't boring and makes fans of real mixed martial arts appreciate that, and shows people who are maybe more casual to mixed martial arts that grapplers can be really, really fun to watch.
Wow. Yeah, talk about the out of left field. I was asking Adesanya and O'Malley, and it's like, yeah, you made the fight. If Oliveira gets his hand raised, like barely, like one finger raised by like Dan Mergliotta after UFC 300, he's in the title fight.
Yeah.
You get Brazil, the Russia market, the South America market, the Dagestani Caucasus Mountains market. Like, yes, of course. That makes a lot of sense to get Oliveira in there. Wow, wow.
The other one.
Top three?
I mean, I do, like I said, I think Sean is more famous that, I mean, maybe more people know Israel Adesanya's name, but more people aren't that going to get.
All my nephews are teenagers. They know Sean O'Malley. They don't. Yeah. I don't even think they could spell Oliveira if you ask them to.
Yeah. So definitely to the mainstream market, Sean is more popular. Like, absolutely. I think another one, Alex Pereira, has to be thrown in there now. He has all the accolades, and the fights with Izzy, like, were so big. Like, those Izzy versus Alex is like the biggest super fights in the last couple of years.
100%. And I was pretty mad at the UFC for, I mean, and it's like you could hear the company line with Joe Rogan where he's like, Dustin is tired. He's losing it. Oh, he just stood up. Okay, he's okay.
Don't get me started on that.
Like, Alex Pereira speaks zero English, like not a lick of English. And then at the 295 in cage interview, Rogan's like, what would you like to see next? Adesanya, come to daddy. Okay, you want to stay in your division and fight light heavyweights. I'm like, what's the company line? Like, they want to, like, keep, but I get it. If you have Alex in Israel headline UFC 300 at light heavyweight, you kind of lose the benefit of two big cards, because then you could do the DDP Dragos Du Plessis card versus Israel. And then you could do the Jamal Hill versus Alex. And then it's two separate pay-per-view card. I get the business side of it, but come on, that trilogy. If we don't get the BMF trilogy with Gaethje, yes, I'm saying Gaethje wins. Sorry, Max. If we don't get Gaethje, Poirier, if we don't get freaking Pereira, Adesanya 3, it's like we're missing the ball. I believe Combat Sports, their Game 7 World Series hockey Super Bowl is a trilogy fight.
The thing is, this is bigger than a trilogy fight because of the kickboxing history.
Right. What is it? 1-3?
It's 1-3. But so, okay. Alex knocked Izzy out, but the other fighting kickboxing, really, like, Alex won it, but I agree that Izzy should have won the decision. So you can look at it and say this is 2-2 across two sports. So it's a trilogy and a, what would that be? Septology or quintology? Quintology. Like, yes. That's huge. Like, it's for everything. They're 1-1 in kickboxing, arguably, 1-1 in MMA. You can't end that on an even number. You can't end that on a tie. Like, it has to happen to me. And I think the issue is just, like, Izzy said he wanted to take time off. Maybe the numbers weren't right for him to fight Alex. Who knows? Maybe it is what you said. Like, they want the two cards. I mean, that they, if they're trying to do an Africa card, Izzy versus Dricus doesn't get bigger than that in Africa. But yeah, we need to see that, especially because they're both coming to the end. Like, Alex is old. Like, older than people realize, I think, because he spent most of his career in glory.
A lot of mileage. Like, Izzy as well. I believe Izzy had, like, 70 professional kickboxing matches.
Yeah, and a couple boxing, too. Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of those are, like, one-night tournaments in New Zealand. And a lot, like, he wasn't fighting in glory against, like, the top kickboxers in the world. Not that he didn't fight great guys at times, but yeah, still, like, I mean, then you consider his MMA career, the damage he took against Strickland and other fights, getting knocked out by Alex. He's coming to the end. I think each of them maybe have like 3 or 4 at most more fights. I wouldn't be surprised if it's just 1 or 2 even for either of them. They're right. Both set for life. It's rare to make that much money in MMA, and they both are clearly like very rich men now.
Make it happen soon. I believe the UFC is just keeping it on their back burner. There was a joke in 2016, 2017, that they're just going to make the Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor trilogy in Bellator 10 years down the road. Well, yeah. Bellator has kind of folded under the PFL umbrella. I mean, I hope the UFC isn't thinking that we can just pull out the trilogies whenever we want. It's like, it doesn't get more spicy than when there's a belt on the line. I mean, if McGregor Diaz came in to save UFC 300, I don't think anybody would have a problem with that with no belt on the line. I think that would be, it crosses all the boxes off. I love Hill, Pereira, but come on, 300 is special. You had Brock Lesnar at both fights, GSP, John Jones was supposed to be on both of them. And no offense to Jamal Hill, but it's like we haven't seen him in a bit. Oof. What are your final takeaways from UFC 299? Gilbert Burns, fan favorite, Florida's own, got finished in his home state. JDM looked phenomenal. He is a wrecking ball. He looks scary. It seems like a fight versus him versus Shavkat would be very interesting. What are your final takeaways with UFC 299?
Final takeaways, Jan is still elite. Jailton, although he got knocked out, I knew his wrestling wasn't the best, but he's way stronger than I thought. Like, he is genuinely could keep going at heavyweight. I thought he was a bit too small for heavyweight. MVP, and like he can have fun fights still. But the JDM is right there with, I think Shavkat's better is how I'd rate them, but JDM is right there with him and Ian Gary as like the guys of the future. You know, these guys, they're young and they're killers. They're so good. I am excited for the future of welterweight.
Yeah, I believe that the Ian Gary is fun. I don't think we're going to get Conor McGregor 2.0. I think they learned from Darren Till, like pushing him too hard. The whole weight situation, changing divisions. Yeah, go ahead.
Did they? Because now they're pushing Bo Nickel. Like, okay, they did this with O'Malley, pushing him really hard. And so you've seen it. People, like, O'Malley's undeniably super popular, but people were hating on him.
They picked their spot. We all know Aljo's blows up to 175. And then a three-month turnaround in Boston. I mean, in case you guys didn't know, it's a big Irish population. O'Malley, I mean, 10 months off, well-rested. I think they were setting up Sterling for failure. The same thing with Sean Strickland. I feel like the UFC can do these indirect hit jobs. Sean Strickland's personality in Canada didn't bode well, and he got what he deserved. Maybe he was asking for more money. And they're like, yeah. Win this fight, and then we'll talk. And it's like, I think UFC is more wiser than people give them credit for.
But I think when you try to force a star, like forcing for a while, it was Ian Gary, but they gave up on that now that everyone hates him, kind of. They forced O'Malley and people, he's really popular. But some, like you saw going into the fight, people were like hating on him, like, bro, was like a fraud, like Cheeto's going to beat him up. I picked Sean to win, but they, when you try to make something non organically, people can catch on to it, like see it as like a corporate marketing thing. And now that's happening with Bo Nickel, forcing him onto the UFC main card, and everyone's just like, get this dude off of here. Like, I like Bo Nickel. I think he has a great MMA future, but when they try to force it, it just doesn't do well.
I couldn't agree more on that front. I was pushing against Errol's take that he was saying get Bo Nickel against Khamzat and then into a title fight in 1 year's time. And it's like Bo Nickel joined the Joe Rogan podcast, and he was even saying that I want five more fights, seven more fights. I want 5 years before I'm talking title. He's like, it seems like he has it very calculated. But I mean, if they throw $2.5 million at him to be like some type of co-main event on a future pay-per-view against a top five guy, it's hard to say no against it.
It is.
You think that he is different. It'd be like, I guess, Jordan Burroughs get into MMA at this point, where he should have money from sponsors from wrestling and stuff. And I'm sure he's doing well, making money from the Penn State program. I mean, I believe they built a PI or something that he's running or managing in Pennsylvania. So I don't think money would be the biggest kick. Maybe it's legacy that jumpstart him into that top 10, top five tier. But I'm like, yeah, Aljo's a former champion. Figueredo, Garbrandt are former champions. Put them in that slot on the main card. Even put Jiří Rakic, which would be an incredible
another former fight. Champion.
Yeah, another former champion.
And that's like a number one contender fight at this point, too.
Can we hide a Bo Nickel on the other card? Like John Jones at UFC 100.
The UFC sells itself as a meritocracy, but it's things like this that show the cracks in that, you know? And since we're on the topic, Bo Nickel, like, it's just weird. Like, if they want to matchmake him against guys he's going to beat, that's fine. But why Cody Brundage? Like, you're just giving, like, you need to have a slow increase in level of opposition. Like, he should be fighting someone who's, like, still unranked, but a bit better than Cody Brundage. No offense to Cody Brundage, but someone a bit better than that. Someone who isn't, 2-4, 1-4 in the UFC. Very weird.
You know what's happening next? It's going to be the fight night. Bo Nickel's going to have a fight night. They need to test him out in the 5-round training camp, 5-round fight, right? And maybe a top 12.
Yeah, like that's logically what should be next. It's just a big gap from like, and they don't really usually do unranked guys on fight night. So if he's going from Cody Brundage to like Gregory Rodriguez or Roman Coppola, I mean, Roman Coppola's not ranked. Someone the in the
Trojan.
End of the top, someone in the end of the top 15 or barely unranked. It's just a big jump to make. It could be done better, I think.
I agree. I mean, I haven't checked the socials. I guess he trends that big, you know, but the people want to tune in to see.
He
like
does. He absolutely does trend that big, but I think it brings over. The reason I think that they're putting him on the main card is because the wrestling thing brings in more of a crossover audience. Most MMA fans are already going to watch the card. And the ones who buy pay-per-views are going to buy the pay-per-views. But wrestling fans who don't usually watch MMA will still tune in for Bo Nickel.
Wow.
And then there'll be a new market of people who may buy this pay-per-view that wouldn't have otherwise. If he's on the prelims, they'd be like, I'll watch the prelims for free and then be whatever. I don't care about the main card. That's well, where I'm thinking. I just wish it was more of a meritocracy.
Again, I'm being joined by Val Duar. Follow him on Twitter and Insta or X.com at the three L's. One of them is for Lupe Fiasco. He is a star. Love his presence online. Love his takes. Been killing it this week with the post 99 recap. Like bing, 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 bing. Just on point. Like y'all must have forgot. Like he's pulling a DP or VD on his own. I love it. Roll with me for a second on this. I try to explain it to my brother, who's a super casual fan. Like he hears about fights being announced by Stephen A. Smith. Like when Stephen A. is like, man, Conor, McGregor, and Mike, Michelle, Charles, a la Chandler. Like I love those guys. Like it's like, oh, and I love how those guys say it's so confident that no research at all. But my point is, the Super Bowl brings in 50 to 75 million viewers. Each commercial years ago was 30 seconds was 1 million, 2 million. 60 second commercial was $4 million. You're telling me the UFC couldn't put McGregor Diaz, couldn't put Jamal Hill, Alex Pereira free on ESPN 9 p.m. on a Saturday night? Like, how many viewers are they going to get? The pay-per-view model is freaking ridiculous. Like, yeah. What teenager kid, I know my nephews are buying the UFC 299 to see Sean O'Malley? They're 15 years old. They are definitely pirating it. They are definitely tuning in however way they can. What do you think?
I 100% agree. Actually, someone brought this up that I read, like, on Twitter a week or so ago, and I was like, that's so true. It's limiting. The NFL it's not entirely free, but your local team is on CBS or Fox or whatever on Sundays. The UFC isn't. So it just limits the market. And that's why the sport is growing really fast, but it's still going to limit them to not be able to take over and become one of the four major sports in America. And we've seen that the pay-per-view model is not what's sustaining them now. It's that $300 million a year they get from ESPN and the, you know, $150 million from DraftKings, $75 from FanDuel or whatever. And then all the other, you know, 30 plus sponsors they have littering the octagon in their commercials. So that's
soon they're going to put a sponsor on each chain link.
Oh my God. Just like they put the people's names, like you pay what, $500 to have your name this small on the octagon.
Oh my God. Did you see in like KSW, fighters get like a sponsor tattoos?
Like temporary tattoos, like on their backs. Yeah.
Dude, man. I'm going to have on my forehead. It's going to say StreamYard.
Oh my God. But yeah, it's just limiting them. And I think it's another case, which I see this a lot with UFC's business model, of short-term over long-term profits, because the pay-per-view money is quick, 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 and everyone wants to pay off their debts that they have. That's what the UFC is funding by having an absurdly high profit margin. But the short money, it could just be so much bigger in the long term. If you
look what they were founded on in 2005, the Ultimate Fighter, it was free on Spike.
That's what brought so many people in. And then they went to Fox. And
can they do the once a year free event, like the International Fight Week card or the Abu Dhabi card? They did it once. Like, can they make
267, great card. Like, that was a stacked card with Jan versus Corey and other Jan versus Alex versus Glover. That was huge, and it was free on ESPN. But if you do that more, I mean, the ESPN deal is coming to an end, so they're going to have to negotiate a new deal. I think it would be smart. It would behoove the UFC at that time to say, hey, we can give you more. We can give you main card pay-per-view cards. We can give you the biggest stars, not in a pay-per-view model. This will draw so many viewers to just regular ESPN and make so many people sign up for ESPN Plus that won't right now. Give us more money for that. And long-term
pay-per-views on Monday. Like, you don't have to do three. I believe from what I was checking, like, I was always seeing when the event would post. I think it's 2.5-3 weeks. Like, boxing. Yeah. I remember HBO Box and Manny Pacquiao. It was the next Saturday. They would air it free on HBO, not HBO pay-per-view. Like, if the UFC wants to do it, they will. Because do you remember Sean O'Malley knocking out Aljamain Sterling, UFC 292? Dude, hour. They posted the entire second round on their YouTube channel. I was like, dude,
and they posted the clips like of the actual knockout, where usually they post the guy getting off the guy after the knockout yeah. because they want you to
like, what happened? Like,
it's just short-sighted, in my opinion, because they want people to, after the fact, go on ESPN Plus and be like, and buy the pay-per-view after the fact. Cause that, like, that's how you, even on ESPN Plus, it's not there for like people who are UFC Fight Pass, not there for people who are subscribed to that. You still have to wait like a week or two to get it, even when you're subscribed to that. They want people to pay to view it after the fact. That is not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. Put the actual like finishes on Instagram, on Twitter, on TikTok, whatever you want. Then you get, you just promote them that way. Like, you promote them by seeing, say, Dustin Poirier got the knockout, and it's just an image of him standing up and going like this. No, post that beautiful right hook. Yes. People will be like, ooh, I should.
That's the art of it. That's what people like can't. That's why we're addicted. That's the core 250K, 350K that will buy every single pay per view. That's why we're in it. Like, we just want to explain it. Like, I brought some random people to UFC 239, where it was the Rockhold, Blachowicz, the John Jones, Thiago Santos, Amanda Nunes, Holly Holm. And they were just like, oh my God, like they'll never forget that card whenever I see them. And it's like, they're Georgian, they're Ukrainian. They're asking me, oh, what's going on with Marab? Like, they get attached to these fighters and want to learn about them and tune into the fights. Like, I think the UFC is bottlenecking it. It could be much, much bigger.
Definitely. And yeah, it's just that short-sighted, short-term over long-term, that is not maximizing the sport's potential.
Would you pay $19.99 a month for ESPN Plus if the pay-per-views were included?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, that, like, no doubt about it. Like, and yeah, because when you don't do that, it just creates more people who are going to stream illegally either way. Like, then they're not even going to pay for the fight nights on ESPN Plus. They're just going to stream those illegally too.
True.
So yeah, I mean, the model, like, you could even charge probably more in America than they do in England. Like,
I
in England,
wish we did that here.
England, exactly. England, all, I mean, even all, like, in some smaller countries, it's like $8 a month. But obviously, they're not going to do that in America, like, the, you know, one of the richest countries in the world. But in England, where it's $20, you could say, okay, ESPN Plus, $30, you get everything. And I think they would probably make more money at the end of the day.
I agree. I 100% agree. It'll be interesting to see where they go. I put the dark horse for the UFC streaming in 2025 or 26, whenever it's supposed to change over. Meta UFC. Oh. You never know. Zuckerberg's hanging out. What the hell is he doing in a corner of a championship? Get the hell out of here. But you, as a businessman, like, that might be interesting. The Netflix thing is interesting. I think they're going to view the Jake Paul, Tyson, the WWE, how things work out. Maybe they all combine TKO, MVP promotions. We never know. It's all monopolizing. Somebody who's not being monopolized, somebody who has spread his wings. And the last topic, Val, I really do appreciate your time. No, I loved you in Tombstone and The Saint and Batman Forever. We could talk about not forever. But your opinion, I believe it's in the MMA sphere of things. And I'm trying to get to the sphere where the UFC will be in September for UFC Noche. But what's next for Francis Ngannou? What was your thoughts of the fight? Talk to me.
I posted like 5 minutes before the fight. I am really worried for our boy. I'm like, I'm really worried he could get knocked out badly.
Wow.
But then I was like, but maybe just like, you never know. It's Francis. He's just magical. He breaks the laws of physics, but not this time. Like, Anthony Joshua did not take him lightly. Like Tyson Fury did, just came out jabbing to the body, setting up the upstairs. Like, Francis never really had a chance in that fight. Even if, like, even trying to land like a one punch Hail Mary shot, it wasn't happening the way he was fighting. He was fighting behind his lead hook, you know, trying to like touch Joshua early and set something up for later. Maybe it just wasn't going to happen that night. AJ, a lot of people like have wrote him off. They're like, oh, he lost to Usyk. Usyk's the best, man. AJ has had 3 great fights after that. And he's looked amazing. Like, he's looked increasingly better in those fights. So yeah, I'm ready. I would love if AJ Tyson Fury, that would be like one of the biggest fights in boxing history, especially if Tyson becomes undisputed over Usyk. Sorry, I'm getting off. We're talking about Ngannou. This is an MMA show. Ngannou, like, he's made it as far as money. He could go and fight Deontay Wilder. Like, that, there's probably still a market for that, given like Deontay Wilder is less skilled than Joshua and has had a couple bad losses.
Two straightforward punchers.
Yeah, it would be crazy, but definitely take some time off. Like, no matter what, take some time off. Yes. If he wants to, like, honor his deal with PFL and just make a quick whatever, I think it's like $5 million or something. Just run over there.
Wow.
You know, get that quick knockout over Henan Ferreira. Because, like, Henan Ferreira hits hard, but that's about it. Whereas Ngannou actually has some skill as a boxer and even as a wrestler, and Henan Ferreira cannot stop takedowns. Like, if Ngannou wants to just take him down like he did Ciryl Gane, he'll be able to take him down and then ground and pound him out. That's a massive skill mismatch. People are talking, oh, Ngannou's chin, like, I'm worried about it. Ferreira might catch him. I really don't.
Can't lose that fight. He cannot lose.
He cannot. And if he does, and he can retire now. That's the thing. Like, I'm just happy for him. No matter how bad it upsets us to see our boy knocked out unconscious on the canvas, I'm happy for him. He made it. He truly made it.
I don't think he is as good as he was in the Tyson Fury fight. I do not think he is as bad as he was this past weekend against Anthony Joshua. I think he's somewhere down the middle. I think you saw a lazy Tyson Fury, and I think you saw a really try hard go getting Anthony Joshua. Like, the focus on fight week, the focus, the intent to finish. Like, Eddie Hearn's like, you listen to me, you listen to me, AJ. Psh, psh, I don't care what your mother call you, you're gonna lose to the Black Panther. That guy has never freaking, like, the motivation was there.
That was a really good impression of Eddie Hearn.
Like, Eddie Hearn's like, hi, Ariel, great to see you. But you know who's smacking AJ around. Like, it's the great when you see Mr. Excellency, Turkey, Alashik, like this small chubby guy with these Goliaths. And he goes, you carry me on your shoulders. You carry me on your shoulders. Like, this guy, because he has so much money, he could tell everybody what to do.
Yeah.
My point is, Eddie Hearn could tell AJ what to do. And there was no doubt about it. He was saying, if you lose to the fat boy Ruiz, if you got dominated twice by Usyk, and now if you lose to Francis Ngannou, he's like, this is done. Your championship dreams, your unified dreams against Fury are over. And I think he was motivated. He was focused, and it showed. I think Francis was a little lackadaisical, probably a little exhausted. The most media he's probably done, the most attention he's ever done. I would love to see him back in the ring, try to right that wrong. Don't jump into PFL right away. I know PFL, they've said twice now in November, they said, yes, Francis is coming back. No doubt about it. And then following this, in the week up to this, Peter Murray, PFL CEO is like, yes, absolutely is the quote. He will absolutely return to the PFL. I'm not saying kind of like stomp on what your deal makers are saying, but can we put PFL on the shorts? Can we put PFL on the ring? Like, let them feel a part of it. Can Peter Murray be at the press conference? Because the money is against Zhang. The money is against Parker. The money is against Wilder. And as you said, there will still be a market for 10 million, 15 million, maybe not 20, maybe not 30, but 8 to 15 million is a pretty good payday in the fall of this year, early next year. I think that would be the fight to go with. Final thoughts, PFL or boxing next for Francis?
I think, okay, so my thing with Francis is he's a genuinely nice guy who, like,
100%.
He's just a genuinely nice guy. I feel like because of that, he would feel bad if he didn't fight at least once for PFL, like, because they went out of their way to give him everything he was demanding. That's genuinely how I feel about it. Like, he may not even want to, but he'll be like, fine. And it's literally like, he should beat Henan Ferreira inside a minute, really, in my opinion. I think there's definitely a chance that happens, but I would also not be surprised if he never fights in MMA again. Also, you said it was Eddie Hearn motivating AJ. I think there was a chance it was Zhang when he went, kill him, to AJ. Really? You see that video? AJ's like, hey, how's it going, man? And Zhang is like, kill him. And AJ's like, AJ looked genuinely afraid. He was like,
that was the quote, kill him?
Yeah, like, you need to find that video. It was, Zhang is a scary dude.
Oh my gosh, gives brutal advice. Let's see if I could pull this up in time. Share screen, where are you, Zhang? Let's see if I get the Talk Sport video.
Kill him.
Look at AJ's face.
Kill him.
No misinterpreting.
Look at his face. There. He's like, whoa, man. Like, it's not that intense.
Wow.
Yeah. Intense, all right, dude.
All right. You have gained another notch of respect in my book. I realize that family members cannot family and friends cannot work in the media. If you just want to play a game of telephone with them, you could immediately hear how people can't recite information. You're like, that's not what A party said or B party said. So I respect you for exactly quoting Zhang and not saying like, go out there, have fun, but also beat him. No, you're spot on with that. Oh my gosh. So what are you working on before we go? I really appreciate your time. This was kind of a spontaneous Twitter live. May have to do this more often. I usually like to do YouTube or podcast, but X Live is going to give it to us. What are you working on? What do you got next for yourself?
Well, I want to say it's fun. Like I've said this for a while, I'll do any podcasts if it's like combat sports oriented. Like I'm down to talk fights whenever, pretty much, as long as I'm free, you know? So I'd be down to do this again. Second, it's okay. This week, I'm kind of ignoring UFC. I'm in a little bit talking about it, but I'm kind of ignoring it in favor of kickboxing because one of the best kickboxing cards of the century is on in Rise El Dorado. I am not a kickboxing expert by any means, but I'm having my boy on who is, and I've studied up on some fights. So we're going to be talking that this week on my podcast, Cagecraft Podcast. I have a new show, the MVP Breakdown with Combat Sports Today News, who I'm working with them now. That's what I got coming this week. But yeah, it's a slow week of fights in MMA. But yeah, Rise El Dorado, this card is absolutely stacked. Main event, Toki Tamaru, one of the best, if not the best, kickboxers alive. Pound for pound number one, arguably, is the main event. But then you just scroll down, and even for me as a very much a kickboxing casual, I know these guys. I see their highlights all the time on Twitter. J-Kick has some of the most violent and fun events in the world. Like, these guys go for it. High action, high pace combos, very little stalling. I love watching J-Kick. The only problem is it's on at like 2 a.m., so it's often hard to catch in America.
You're a beast, though. I'm sure you'll tune in. You'll snort a Celsius. That thing is nuts. I thought it was like a fun seltzer, but folks, beware. Celsius is a freaking coolly branded Red Bull. Like they brand it like it's freaking polar seltzer. It is not. It is not just.
I had the pleasure of trying it.
Don't. I had to watch my kids for a full week, all three of them. So it was like that gave me the boost. I was like, oh my God, I feel like Charlie Sheen right now. But
Tiger's blood.
Yeah. Val, just for that comment, we will have to do this early more often. And my man, since I know that you're following boxing, you see the demons that Mr. Ryan Garcia is fighting? You see what's going on? When is Alex Jones getting Ryan Garcia on his show?
I don't know what's going on, man. Like, part of me thinks even
sorry if I'm making you uncomfortable.
No, it's kind of sad, but it's also kind of just like, what the hell is going on with this dude? Because some of the things he says, it just makes it seem like he's off the deep end. But some of the things he says, it makes it seem like he's messing around too. Maybe it's a mixture of both. I don't know. I think when he posted that video that was like, I'm okay, guys. They took my phone and stuff. I think he was like, what is it? 3130'd or whatever it's called, where they like involuntarily hospitalize you, inpatient mental health. I think that's what was going on there. He's obviously out of that now. It's a 72-hour hold. And he's back to post, like he posted, I know who killed Tupac Shakur, but they won't tell you. I got proof. He keeps saying I got proof about very weird things and then not giving proof. Also, the guy who killed Tupac Shakur was arrested last year, like after 20 years.
Maybe he just got the notification.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope at this point, it might be irresponsible to let him fight Devin Haney. Like if that he has that much messed up with his brain, I hope he's okay. He's kind of always been a weirdish guy, but this is off the deep end.
That's what kind of drives me crazy. A little anecdote to what we're talking about and adjacent to this topic is that fighters, boxers, MMA fighters, they kind of just get like a pass because it's like, oh, that's the Gus Johnson. This is what happens in MMA. Like the president of our league can slap his wife. Oh, Conor McGregor can slap a fan's phone. Like this is just MMA fighters. Like this is football players being crazy with their wives. It's like, no. MMA fighters, martial artists, they have these tools. And I thought the whole concept was to control yourself, to be more disciplined. Like they should be held to a higher standard, not just like, oh, that's Mike Tyson being crazy. That's McGregor being crazy. That's John Jones being crazy. Yeah. It's like, no, they should be shamed a lot more. But I digress.
But money talks.
Money talks, so do we. Val Duan at the 3Ls. I really do appreciate the time. My man, now that I know that you are into conspiracy, I'm just kidding. I know that you're into boxing as well. I'm getting into it more and more with all these big events. Shout outs to Riyadh Season and the Abu Dhabi, the Saudi Arabia team that are making these fights happen. My hope of hopes, dream of dreams in this thing called combat sports is that Saudi Arabia puts the Sheik hat on Dana White again, and we can get John Jones versus Francis Ngannou. Ooh. Money talks. Let the Saudi team front the $25 million for each of them, and then the fight happens, because money for them is just pawns on a chessboard, in my opinion. Dana White,
it is.
Make it happen, please. And you know he will. You know he wants to, if it's enough money. All right, Val. Yeah, I appreciate the time, man. Any closing thoughts?
Year. No, yeah. I just want boxing set up for a great year. MMA fans like to talk down on boxing. Boxing's still going strong. Don't let Jake Paul make you think boxing is just a sideshow now. It's still going strong. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I'm reading, repeating the bet as much as I can, but I'm about to end the stream in about 20 seconds. Okay, 30 seconds. No, what is that, 28? Okay. This is live podcasting, folks. Thank you guys for dropping in. Okay, 13 seconds. If you guys want to throw comments on the post, you can. 7 seconds. Val, I really appreciate the time. Talk to you soon, my brother.
You too, bro. Appreciate you having me.